November. November in the books. We're already a month into the college basketball season. Still breaking down some teams and a whole lot to get into. There's some shakeups at the top of the college basketball rankings. There's been some shakeups in the state basketball hierarchy. And there have been some shakeups from some of our local mid-major schedules. A lot has gone on. There's a lot to break down in the first December episode of Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Elijah Campbell, one half of the equation here of the of Campbell and Knezovic. Michelle joining me once again. And Michelle, there, like I said, there's a lot to get to today. There's some turmoil in Memphis. There's Belmont with the biggest stretch of their year still going. There's been a rotating chair at number one for the – it will be 3 weeks because Duke will not be number one whenever the polls come out next week, much to the happiness of you, the local Kentucky fan. There will be three different number ones before we get to December 15th, and that's great for the sport. So I'll go ahead, welcome you in, and initial thoughts. Like, how's it going?
I'm overwhelmed, Elijah. I can't keep up. There's so many – like, I feel like – you know, last year was the COVID year. I honestly, like, the timeline of all this, I just don't even know anymore.
It's hard for the brain to keep up.
Obviously, there wasn't as much traveling and non-conference and everything. And now it's like this season, full head first into all of these preseason tournaments. Everybody's traveling, you know, Belmont's in Orlando and then Memphis is playing. And I honestly just cannot keep track of everything. And I'm like, ESPN must-see game highlights, and I'm like trying to get all of them. I'm like, how did I miss Dayton, Kansas? Like there's just so many games. It's amazing because there's always something to watch. Like you said, the teams around here, we have done season previews on Tennessee, Belmont, Vanderbilt. We're gonna hit Memphis today, and they've all been rolling. And then the SEC as a whole, and then the Power Five as a whole, and then just college basketball as a whole. I just love it so much.
It's in full swing.
But very overwhelmed. But it's December 2nd today.
Yeah, time of recording. Mm-hmm.
Crazy. It is crazy how fast football season went. And we're not only in basketball season, like before we know it, we're going to be in the heat of basketball season, conference play, and things are going to get rolling.
Memphis, Tennessee's in 16 days, and then I think 3 days after that's Louisville, Kentucky. Like, we're getting to the fun part of the college basketball season.
Do it with me. L's down.
As you hit L's the L's down, we can screen grab that. So if that actually ends up happening and Louisville ends up losing to Kentucky, we can have some fun with that. But we'll go ahead and start. I'll set the scene for you here because you alluded to us breaking down Memphis, and that's the one major team in the state we haven't gotten to talk much about yet, and this might be the most interesting. We'll take it back to the morning of Friday, August 26th, Robbie and Rex Road, halfway through the show, we discussed, you, myself, and Joe, talked about Imani Bates committing to Memphis. Number one recruit in that. He reclassified, became like the number three recruit in this year's recruiting class. Joined forces with Jalen Duren, who is another top five player in the recruiting class for this upcoming year, to basically form, you know, a potentially top 10 Memphis basketball team. We talked about it that day, and we talked about how far is Imani Bates going to elevate an offense, a team that has had a dominant defense the last 2 years, but has been putrid on the offensive side of the ball. What does Duren and Bates do? We have seven games of a sample size. The first five were solid. They were fun to watch. I said on our first episode, or I think it was our second episode, that in the first 7 minutes of the Tennessee Tech game, I was hooked. They're throwing alley-oops to each other. They look fun. They got to display their athleticism. And I'm like, I get it. They play Tennessee Tech, yada, yada, yada. And the next several games, they weren't playing hardly anybody. They struggled against Virginia Tech, which Virginia Tech underrated. I probably didn't give them enough credit. In the column I wrote earlier this week.
They're a Power 5 team.
Yeah, and they're a Power 5 team that's in the top 30 in KenPom. They're a well-coached team. Mike Young, fantastic coach at Virginia Tech. That guy did miracles at Wofford. But they got a big win there, and then they lose to Iowa State, who won two games last year. They went 2-22 and went winless in the Big 12. A completely brand-new look Iowa State team. And then last night might have been the worst loss in the Penny Hardaway era, losing at Georgia, who currently sits about 179 in KenPom right now. That's a team that was the worst team in the SEC last year, and they came into this year with a depleted roster. I mean, their two best players, Kamara and Wheeler, transfer to Kentucky and Dayton, respectively. It's an inexcusable loss, and if you would have told me going into last night that Memphis scores 79 points, I'm telling you they win by 25. But the defense completely faltered, and Georgia hung 82 on them. A bad Georgia team hung 82 on them. We were planning the show out, right? And we were like, we're going to break down Memphis, season overview. But I feel like we got to lead off with the travesty that happened in Athens, mm-hmm. Georgia last night.
Elijah, I feel like also this too brings another point that we didn't talk about last year was the magnitude of a packed home court.
Yeah. Georgia had it.
Right?
Yeah.
Aside from the game itself, Memphis is a young team. Traveling down to Georgia, it's overwhelming, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be able to perform in these situations, right? When you go to conference tournaments, you got to be able to perform under pressure like this. We said the first five games for Memphis, they looked great. They were exciting. They were a fun team, but the competition they were playing, you know, mm-hmm. you see a lot of those kind of random non-conference games, smaller schools that
your
you want to get in,
Centrals.
In-state teams.
Yeah,
exactly. And not saying, like you said, Georgia's not a top team this year, mm-hmm. but they are in the SEC. They are in a Power Five conference. And this was a good opportunity for Memphis to go down there and just get a check off their list. Because they play in the American Conference, and the American Conference has good basketball schools, but when you are in a smaller conference, it's important to get these wins. You know, we talked about Belmont. It was important for them to go to Ohio and try to get the win over them for postseason reasons.
Resume building.
I mean, then again, the American Conference, it is more competitive for Memphis. It's not like the Ohio Valley, but like that was such an easy check off the list for that team. They had five players scoring in more than double digits. You know, like offensively, it was fine, but you need to play complementary basketball. You have to get back on defense. These kids are young. This is not high school anymore where you can just go drop 20 and you're the best. Amani Bates has probably been the best player on his team since he was maybe eight.
Ever since he's been playing basketball. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And they got to realize that moving forward, like you can't just rest on being able to score 20 points and you got to be getting steals. They also, I saw that they had their least amount of turnovers, 11 turnovers in the game. That's still too many.
Yeah. And they even had 13 assists. Like they won the assist to turnover battle, which they haven't won in a while. I mean, that was the big thing against Iowa State is that they kept turning the ball over. And then whenever Iowa State was hitting tough shots in the second half, Memphis started to let their defense slip a little bit because the offense wasn't scoring. They let one side of the floor affect the other.
Yep.
And this is a team that the last few years, like we talked about, there have been an elite defensive team. Like KenPom's ratings had them as the number one defense in college basketball last year. They were top five the year before, but the problem has always been scoring the ball. So like when something happens last night, like you said, they had five people in double figures. The starting five was in double figures. I think the biggest thing is, too,
spreading the wealth. Like, that's what you want. And like, especially for a young team, that's great.
Yeah. And like, offensively, I felt like they made some strides.
Mm-hmm.
But they gave up 82 points to a Georgia team that is offensively anemic. And a lot of that came from Georgia getting to the free throw line 35 times. Georgia only shot 50 shots from the field. They shot 35 free throws, Michelle. Like, you're not going to win.
I was just,
team get those shots.
Elijah, I was just going to say that was going to be my next point. I was just going to read this line in this article I looked up on Memphis's website.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia scored 27 of its points from the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
And then Memphis was 14 for 17 from the foul line.
Sometimes you just got to get the shots.
Almost 30 points.
That's a killer. It's an absolute killer. Playing defense without fouling is a skill. And that's one thing Penny's teams I've always felt like have been pretty good at. Like the whole point of that defense is to make you shoot tough shots. But if you can't do it without fouling, it's going to pigeonhole you a little bit. Like Jalen Duren fouled out last night. You can't have your one of your best players on the bench because he fouled out in the last couple possessions of that game. That hurts. And it's not like this is a one-time thing for Memphis, too. Out of 358 teams in Division I college basketball, in opponent free throw rate, Memphis ranks 321st. So for almost every... It's bad. 321 is their ranking. And that's at 40.4, meaning that almost every two shots another team takes, they're taking a free throw for. All it takes is to run into a team like Georgia, who just on any given night makes their free throws, and a team that shouldn't be scoring 55 on you is scoring 82.
You're giving away points. And that's the frustrating thing for this team and for this loss, is that it's not like they weren't making shots. It's not like they weren't offensively playing well. But when you are fouling and letting the other team get to the foul line that frequent, mm-hmm. almost 30 points. What was the final? The final score was
82-79.
So close to half Georgia's points were made from the foul line. That is just
giving them away. You're giving points away.
It's not like they were hitting all these three-pointers or making these amazing plays. You were giving them these points. That's the frustrating part.
If you're a Memphis fan, it makes you want to pull your hair out. We'll have to ask David James, the resident Memphis fan here at the station, about that. I'm sure he watched that game and probably lost his hair. I mean, and that might not even be the most frustrating thing of the game last night. Mark Giannotto, ESPN 92.9, in Memphis, quoted a Penny Hardaway quote from from a radio interview after the game. Quote, "There aren't enough guys in that locker room who care about winning unless they are the ones that are helping us win. It's not team. That's the danger of having a lot of talent. The talent has to want to play together, and right now the talent doesn't want to play together." So you hear that for the first time.
Red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag.
How big of a red flag is it when the head coach is talking about this team not being together and guys not wanting to win unless they are the reasons why the team wins? And we're talking about a team that has two superstars that are NBA caliber talent, ages 18 and less.
First off, the fact that Penny Hardaway said that about his team, hats off to you.
He's honest. Because he's not going to BS you. He's not going to BS you.
Because not a lot of coaches are going to say that. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you hear that quote, you know that it's not a good thing whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Especially when you have a talented team. If egos get in the way of it, it's going to ruin it. Mm-hmm. And I hate to bring it back to Kentucky, because don't get me wrong, I'm sure they've had guys in the past who have been that way as well. When you are a top recruit and you're really just looking to get to the NBA and you don't care as much about basketball, especially with a college basketball world turning into a one and done and not seeing as many guys stay for a couple of years. But just covering Kentucky, I'm just very familiar with the program and the players and things like that over the last couple of years. And Cal would always make the point of, like, it doesn't matter what your stat sheet says, like, mm-hmm. make another pass it again. Like, you need to make these plays and stuff, and you want everyone to eat. You want everyone to eat a piece of the cake, and that's how you're going to win. But we saw Memphis, five guys had double figures, which is great. You know, they're spreading the wealth, but if that's the mindset in the locker room of, you know, I don't really care. Like, I just need to have like a double double or a 20 point game plus, because I know I'm going to the league and I'm going to be a lottery pick, that's going to be detrimental to the program. And you better fix that quick. You better fix that in the locker room, because that's very toxic. And it's going to be a very quick rise and fall to this Memphis team.
Yeah. I mean, basketball is the ultimate team sports. And, like, you need each other to be able to elevate yourselves. And the thing is, like, this team, in the two players alone and Bates and Duren alone, have enough talent to make a run. These are elite high school players. And Bates isn't eligible for the draft this year, but will be a lottery pick next in 2023. I can almost guarantee it.
Because he's young.
He's young. He's long. He can shoot the ball. Yeah, he won't turn 7. He won't turn 18 until I think mid January.
And that comes with maturity too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's a really hard thing when you have that many freshmen on the team, and you see it in March. You know, that's why you see veteran teams winning consistently. I mean, look at the Villanova team a couple years ago, the Virginia team a couple years ago. Then you have the Dukes and the Kentuckys where they have two, three lottery picks on the team, maybe more. But you see them fall apart because they haven't been together that much as a team. And when you have freshmen acting like that and young guys acting like that, it's not going to be good.
It's going to derail things awfully quick. And it's one of those things, too, when you play in a game like they were last night, that was a one-possession game for the last 10 minutes or so. You need to be able to trust the guy standing next to you. If you're going to make a pass to somebody to hit a crucial shot, you have to trust that they're going to be able to hit that shot. And if you don't have that, you're not going to be making the right pass at the right time. And I feel like the biggest thing for Memphis outside of, you know, playing defense without fouling is someone in that locker room. Like, the coaches can only do so much. I understand this is probably – this might be a little on Penny. Sometimes coaching – if bad coaching can ruin cohesiveness. So I think Penny deserves a little bit of blame, but also there's got to be players in that locker room. Alex Lomax has to be the adult in the room. Senior, or Earl Timberlake, you know, a guy who's played at the Division I level elsewhere. He might not have been in Memphis his entire career, but he's played a lot of college basketball. The adults in the room need to be able to lead by example and be able to guide these guys along the way. Because while their talent, the talent of those two, Bates and Duren, can carry you to wins, conference titles, tournament titles will be won by players leading by example and someone being the adult in the room, you know, someone taking over and speaking up when other players think a coach's voice is going stale. Now, obviously, I'm not in that locker room. They might be doing that already, just maybe to no avail. But it's going to take a team effort for everyone to get on the same page. And sometimes it takes a non-coach voice to be able to bust into somebody or just reach them. You don't have to yell at them or anything. Like, that's one thing. You just got to be able to reach them. You got to be able to get them to buy in to what the coaches are trying to preach and trying to lay out for the rest of the season. And if they don't do that, it is going to be a wasted season, which would be really unfortunate because this team's just loaded with talent. They're too good to have this happen to him. Before we move on to the next segment, last thing for Memphis, from all the things that you've seen from them this year, they're 7 games deep. What's the number one thing that you think they need to be able to improve on to fulfill what their potential is, essentially?
Defense. Smart defense. 100%. I think we saw probably the worst of it last night, or I hope at least the worst of it last night.
As bad as it's ever been for a Penny coach team, yeah.
Exactly, especially since this is Memphis's identity, and now this year you finally have offensive power and a bunch of different weapons you can use offensively. Like we said, 5 guys scoring in double digits, that's what you want. But playing smart defense, the fouls and getting Georgia to the line that frequently and having them score almost 30 points in free throws is pretty much unacceptable, and you're going to shoot yourself in the foot. Like, they beat themselves last night.
100%.
They need to get better on defense. They need to play smart defense. And I do think this team can be great if they do that, but it's not just an offensive game.
Very much so. I agree wholeheartedly that, and you nailed that. I think defensive rebounding needs to be a little better. It was a little better last night. And then turnovers. They only committed 11 turnovers last night, but you got to want to aim to get that in single digits and always have more assists than turnovers. Once the assist rate goes up, you got to be able to maintain turnovers at a bare minimum, especially when you're playing defenses that aren't as, I guess, burdensome. Like, Georgia's not a burdensome defense. That's one where you should be able to score the amount of points you did and still win by 20, you know. But they're ranked 349th in turnover percentage on offense. Like, less percentage of your possessions need to end in turnovers. And a lot of that's slowing down and adjusting to the speed of the game. So.
Exactly. And that'll help with just the freshmen too, getting more comfortable. You know, the game will become slower for them. As the season gets on, Yeah. But I guess we'll see.
It's growing pains. Sometimes those are expected of really young teams, and that's exactly what's happening to Memphis right now. They still have that very anticipated game on Saturday, December 18th, against Tennessee. And until then, they are going to play Alabama at home and then at Mississippi. That game is this Saturday. Those are two hard games, too. Those are not easy get-right games. Oh, and on Friday, they're playing home or they're home against Murray State, who is a KenPom Top 100 team and a team that is notorious for catching teams at their worst and beating schools like Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, the road is not going to get easier from here, right? And it's going to get faster, and these are freshmen, and it's their freshman year of college. Everything right now, full speed ahead into conference play pretty much until the end of March.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun to see exactly where this team goes and progresses. But we come back, we'll go ahead and catch up with some of the things from around the country. ACC Big Ten Challenge, the rotating chair of number ones in college basketball right now. We'll get into all that on the other side as you're listening to Courtside with Campbell Knezovic on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here's Caleb Love. Drives and throws it down.
Baby. Oh, they love what they see.
That was the voice of college basketball. Dickie V getting excited for a Caleb Love jam last night. North Carolina statement win over Michigan as part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Michigan going in the wrong direction. North Carolina finally righting some wrongs after losing a pair of games to Purdue and Tennessee, both of those of which were double-digit losses. That's part of the big week that's going on in college basketball. And that same ACC and Big Ten challenge that I mentioned earlier, Duke fell to Ohio State, which means we will have number one team, number three on the year, as you can only assume that Purdue is going to be the next number one team in college basketball, barring any kind of crazy upset, which I don't really see happening because Purdue's a pretty good team. But in the last week of basketball, Michelle, with all this that's going on, what's your number, I guess, your first takeaway from the ACC Big Ten Challenge, Duke beating Gonzaga, and then turning around to Ohio State? It's been a hectic week that doesn't just involve Memphis fouling every time they get on the floor.
There's some good teams out there this year. I think one of my biggest takeaways is I don't remember the last time it was this early in the season, and I've seen so many teams performing at such a high level. Mm-hmm. We've seen some good basketball. I don't know if you watched, I came into work this morning, you know, at like 5, and it's kind of nice because yeah. I'll fall asleep early and I'll miss the games. Uh-huh. And then when I come in, I'll be able to watch all the recaps like on the TV. So I'm like, okay, what did I miss last night? Uh-huh. Can we talk about NC State, Nebraska, 4 overtimes?
That game was a splatter show, but that one was as fun as a low scoring ish 4 overtime game can be. That one was a treat to watch.
And I'm going to set the scene for you. So I'm sitting there, I'm watching it, and I didn't, the lower third or the words didn't say like 4 overtimes yet. Right. So they're uh-huh. like, okay, overtime, first overtime. And then it's like, they're just missing. Like they just like literally couldn't, either team could not make a layup, like just to like get ahead, just to like win. And NC State won in fourth overtime. It was 104-100, but
took four overtimes to get to triple digits.
Here I am talking about elite level basketball, and then we see this game. But hey, the fight so early in the season, teams know that it's going to be important later in the year to get these since we have non-conference games back, right? We didn't have them last year, and I missed them. You know, we saw Duke and Gonzaga play in Las Vegas. Duke won. They were the number one spot, then came back. Duke played Ohio State. Ohio State upset Duke. Now, Duke's out of the number one. Like you said, we're probably going to see Purdue in the number one spot. Boiler up, baby. Their football team was actually good this year, too. Yeah. So, like, what the heck is happening?
Good year to be
and
pretty.
Kentucky plays Ohio State in a couple weeks, so that'll be a good game. We saw Michigan State beat Louisville last night. We saw Syracuse had a great game against Indiana. That was a really good game the other day. Just so many. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, I can't keep up.
Yeah, oh, it's incredible. And like for anybody else who tuned in to watch any of the 4 overtimes between Nebraska and NC State, I know I'm a masochist and I did that to myself, but I had all the fun in the world doing it. But then You also, like how you mentioned, speaking of double overtime games, you know, Indiana and Syracuse had a thriller. Not many teams, Indiana down four with like 5 seconds left, down multiple possessions with 5 seconds left, found a way to come back and at least take it to multiple overtimes. Indiana's a really interesting team, too. I mean, that's almost a one-man band there with Trace Jackson Davis. That kid can play. We'll go stick in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. One of the biggest takeaways for me, too, is obviously Purdue took Florida State to the woodshed. Not a lot of teams score 93 points on Florida State, but they did. I mean, Purdue is a really good basketball team. They're going to be the number one team in the country. They have the number one offensive efficiency team in college basketball. And Jaden Ivey might be the candidate, the leading candidate, I guess, for player of the year so far. It's really hard to make a case otherwise, the way he's kind of elevated this Purdue team. And I mentioned him in our first episode, we were doing our top teams or whatever. I liked Purdue, but I didn't have them as even the top team in the Big Ten. And now Michigan's lost a few games straight. Michigan's going in an awful direction right now. They're not going to be ranked in these next rankings, as they were 24 when North Carolina just drubbed them last night. And then Purdue is doing what they're doing right now, and they already have wins over, like I said, Florida State, North Carolina, and Villanova. I mean, I think it's time to take this Purdue team serious as a serious contender.
Well, I actually was going to mention the same thing. Purdue, we didn't talk about them in our first episode when we're predicting all the teams and we mentioned, hey, we're going to predict all this and then it's probably going to change all within a couple games. But like you said, when you have a good player like that and they can not only be good themselves, but you know, they're a great player when they can make everybody around them a better player and win games. And that's, I think, what we saw from Purdue. But I mean, Michigan State, when they performed in the Champions Classic, didn't look very good against Kansas. I mean, they looked fine, but Kansas definitely like had a handle on them. Then they went ahead and beat Louisville last night. That was a pretty much close race. And then Michigan State pulled away at the end. And then we saw Dayton upset Kansas.
Stunner. After Dayton lost three games to teams outside the KenPom 198. Three games at home to teams outside the 198 mark. That's incredible how they end up turning that around.
Hey, we're going to go beat Kansas now. We're going to lose these three games, then we're going to beat Kansas.
One of which was to UMass Lowell. I mean, Matt Saggio, one of the sales staff members here at Cromwell Media, big Dayton fan. And the day after they lost to UMass Lowell, he came in, you know, to the studio and said, I don't even know if that's a school. I didn't know that was a real school. And they beat Dayton. So we're probably not going to be very good this year. And then they lose to Lipscomb by a lot, by almost 20 points. Lose to Austin Peay at home, who's not very good this year, by a lot. And then they turn around, oh, they'll beat Miami. They'll beat Kansas, who's number four in the country at the buzzer. Oh, and then beat a really good Belmont team to basically cancel out the horrific first week of the year that they had. Dayton's
exactly. It cancels it out now. Like, we don't even have to ever talk about UMass Lowell ever again. Dayton, you're good. Check off the list moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I've seen a team at the mid-major rank do that much damage control within a week span. I don't think I ever have.
A complete 180.
In my column this week, where I did winners and losers from Feast Week, Dayton had to be on there. How can you exclude Dayton? I mean, they have dug themselves the deepest hole in the first week of the season and then basically filled that hole up by winning these games. It's amazing what Dayton's done. And that one is a little surprising to me, the fact that they were even able to be in the game against Kansas. And it's not like it was Kansas playing that bad. I think Kansas played down a little bit, but that's a well-coached team. Anthony Grant can coach, man.
It gets me really excited for Dayton because – in 2019, 2020, when Obi Toppin was on Dayton,
fun team.
That was a great team. Mm-hmm. And that was a team you expected to go deep into March. And one of the most tragic parts was obviously we had COVID, which canceled everything. And you were really sad for those programs like Dayton, where they don't have a team like Duke, Kentucky, Gonzaga, that's elite every single year. But it gets me really excited for this team. The fact that they might have, I mean, I know it's so early, but the teams they beat and how they played definitely will be in March and hopefully be able to make a good run, especially because they really just got it taken away from them. I mean, everybody did that COVID year, but special teams like that.
That's the best team Dayton will probably ever have, you know? I mean, this team is proven they can be good, but like That team was probably the greatest 2-point shooting team to ever play basketball. They were one of them, you know, statistically speaking. And that was the school's best chance to win a title. And we'll just never know exactly how far they could have gone. And that was, to me, when that season got canceled, that was the most upsetting part, was that that school that's not a traditional, like, power, they can't just reload every year. You know, like the
and Obi Toppin's go into the league. Like, it's not like they're going to stay and risk getting injured or their draft stock.
Exactly. And he left when the iron was hot, and they had the National Player of the Year. And you might not see that from Dayton ever again. So lastly, we'll go ahead and go with a question I thought of. Your biggest surprise this year in college basketball after 1 month, and the team that has disappointed you, the team that you were high on when we did our rankings, that you were really high on, that has just completely flopped, and then one that you didn't consider that now you're starting to believe in a little bit.
Well, I'll start with team. I wouldn't say I didn't consider them, but they weren't in my top 10 / like really just high on my list. A lot of hype preseason is Purdue, which we just highlighted on. They're a good team.
Yeah.
I think we saw them put together. I'm honestly just surprised by them, but also intrigued. I feel like I still don't know a lot about the team. I still want to see them get a couple more significant wins under their belt, especially when they get in the conference play. They'll obviously have a tough schedule because it's always tough. But Purdue's one I'm intrigued by, and I'm excited to see how they, just continue to win. But like we said, that it's once you get to the top, it's hard to stay at the top, that number one spot. The crown's heavy.
Yep.
We could easily see another team knock them out. Them have a loss. You know, Duke was number one. They were undefeated, and then they lost. So that's the fun thing about college basketball and college athletics is anything can happen. You can see a Dayton beat a Kansas, especially so early in the season when teams are trying to find their identity. I would say disappointed, honestly, Memphis.
Yeah.
After last night's performance, I just see so much. I had them high in my top 10. I think I had them at like seven or eight
you
or something.
You had them a lot
like
higher
that.
Than I did, for sure.
I can't remember off the top of my head what I had them at, but so much national attention surrounding this team. And I think the most disappointing part was obviously last night's performance was just bad, right? They shouldn't have lost to that Georgia team. But then to have Penny Hardaway say that essentially there's egos on the team and people care more about individual stat lines than winning a game is even more disappointing, because from an outsider looking in, you see how this team could be just so exciting, and we've seen glimpses of it, but it's going to be a very quick, like I said earlier, rise to fall if the ego gets in the way and the culture's not right in the locker room and if we don't see them play defense.
Yeah.
So I would say those are probably my two teams we kind of highlighted earlier. But team that I enjoy watching the most, my Wildcats,
Of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
We haven't mentioned them yet, so I just had to, you know.
And they look really good too, outside of that first loss, which isn't a bad loss by any means. That's not a losing to Duke, who obviously ended up becoming number one in the country, is not a bad loss whatsoever. We can go get that out of the way. And then they've taken care of business everywhere else and have looked really good doing it. If you get that production that you're getting out of Ty Washington right now in that first game, we're probably talking about a different story, because Oscar Tshiebwe gave them every chance to come back and win that game, because that man grabs every rebound on planet Earth.
Offensive rebounds is the name of the game for him. Really quick on the Ty Washington / relating it to the whole Memphis situation. Mm-hmm. This is where you see the two differences in freshmen, right? We're assuming Penny Hardaway, okay, this is complete assumption that Penny Hardaway is probably talking about those freshmen on the team.
Hard
you know,
to believe he's not. Yeah.
Exactly. Don't know. We're speculating totally, but we're inferring from what he said. Ty Washington came out with a quote in a postgame press conference or something. I saw it on like Kentucky Twitter or something. Mm-hmm. And essentially in the quote, I'm going to sum it up. He was like, I don't really care what my stat line is or anything. I just want to win the games.
That's
and those are the type of players you need. And Penny's going to learn from this. He's still a fairly new head coach. Those are the type of players you need to take that into consideration when you're recruiting. Mm-hmm. Yes, getting a top player like that, you are going to get a lot of national attention. And for Memphis, it's great because they're not as big of a program, but he's going to be able to see how detrimental this could be to his team if that's the way the mentality is going to be surrounding those players. So I just wanted to connect those two really quick because I thought it's kind of an interesting
They go hand in hand. Yeah, they absolutely go hand in hand. I think for me, the biggest surprise, I had Baylor number 9 coming into the year out of respect that they won the whole thing. I mean, the Jared Butler loss was significant. The Davion Mitchell loss was significant. Those were the two best defenders on the team. I mean, Davion Mitchell was your back-to-back Big 12 defensive player of the year. Well, they've come out and they're only the 5th best defensive team and 6th best offensive team in terms of adjusted efficiency on KenPom. The only team, I believe, that's in the top 10 in both categories. They dominated their tournament. They beat the tar out of Michigan State, who we've established is a pretty good team. They're a pretty solid team.
I mean, Mike Izzo will always have a solid team.
Yeah, exactly. Izzo's always going to have a team that's solid. And Baylor's just running through everybody. I mean, VCU tripped them up a little bit because VCU does play that weird style where they're going to force a ton of turnovers, but they're not going to score a lot themselves. But there's so much to love about this Baylor team because this Baylor team is a little more like your typical Scott Drew team that's going to just hit you in the mouth. You know, like they are a physical team, the 9th best offensive rebounding team in the country. And last year, they're the best 3-point shooting team in the country. Well, not necessarily this year because you lose Jared Butler and Davion Mitchell, who are 40%+ 3-point shooters.
Yeah, those are going to be kind of significant.
Hard to replace, but they're still elite defensively. They force the 3rd most turnovers in terms of percentage of turnover possessions in college basketball. Pretty significant. They don't turn the ball over themselves. My biggest question mark, too, was coming into the year, is James Akinjo, the transfer from Arizona, he's going to have to take the offensive burden that Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler left in terms of distribution. Well, Jared Butler and Davion Mitchell last year both averaged about 9 assists per 100 possessions. Akinjo's at 12 so far this season. He's getting 12 assists per 100 possessions. That man is finding guys in the right places to make plays. He is having an incredible year. I did not foresee him having a year like that. I didn't think their leading scorer would be LJ Cryer off the bench. Their leading scorer comes off the bench. I mean, you have an elite 6 man. Jonathan Shamwa, Chachua, and Flo Thamba are still anchors in the middle. They are that good defensively and still have that kind of size. And then Matthew Mayer comes off the bench, too, a guy who's probably going to be drafted in the NBA draft this upcoming year. He's got size, post-scoring ability, can shoot the 3 ball. Like, this Baylor team is, I won't say as good as last year. Last year's team was special. The national championship special. But this year's Baylor team, who I had finishing behind Kansas, at least, and Texas in the Big 12, I had them being 3rd in the Big 12, certainly look like the best team in the Big 12 right now and certainly look like a team that can repeat. I like how you went with Memphis for your biggest disappointment, and I completely agree, but I want to go Michigan. I probably would go Memphis 1 so far and then Michigan 2, but I think at least Memphis might have an avenue to fix a lot of their stuff. Overestimated the problems that Michigan's going to have in terms of returning experience. I know they had a loaded recruiting class. Hunter Dickinson came back, which was massive. He was an All-American player last year. But I underestimated, actually, the importance of the loss of guys like Mike Smith, who efficiently ran the show for that team. Isaiah Livers. Those are bigger losses than I really accounted for. Franz Wagner, who is having an incredible season with the Orlando Magic right now. He looks like one of the steals of the draft in the NBA. Those were much bigger losses than I thought. You can't just plug in Devontae Jones from Coastal Carolina and then Caleb Houston, who's still working out some things as a freshman, to come in and immediately fill that void. I think I probably expected too much from them to be able to do that, but they're 4-3 right now. North Carolina looked like a faster, stronger, more physical team last night. I mean, they beat the hell out of them in ways that Juwan Howard teams haven't been beat at Michigan so far. This team ranks 129th in effective field goal shooting. They're not a great shooting team. They're not a good shooting team right now. And they rank 269th in the country in turnover percentage. So they can't shoot the ball. They turn the ball over a lot. They rank 325th in defensive turnover possession, so they're not turning over anybody else and making defense turn into offense. Their best offense right now is just throwing it into Hunter Dickinson, letting him make two post moves, and then let everybody else get the hell out of the way. That's not a great offense to do. It's easy game playing against. Yeah, and North Carolina exploited that. Hubert Davis exploited that last night, his North Carolina team. Michigan has been incredibly disappointing, and it's not getting any easier because they play San Diego State at home, who's a pretty good team, and then you start conference play shortly after that. Like, they could lose to San Diego State.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And
on the road, in California, like, so many different factors.
You drop that game, they're sitting at 4-4. That's not a team that really I had. Yeah, a team that I had like the number four team in the country coming into the season. I had them ranked above Purdue, and Purdue is on another planet than Michigan is right now. So
this is why we love college basketball, Elijah. So many games, so many exciting games to come. I'm just so happy that we have, first off, full stadiums back, and second of all, non-conference, because this preseason stuff or pre-conference play is phenomenal to see these top teams play against each other.
It's a ton of fun. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation by previewing a fun non-conference rivalry game that's happening in our city tonight. And we'll have our first rendition of the Give and Go. That's what's coming up next here on Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're back. Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic, and we are debuting a new segment that we're going to start right now. And that is going to be called The Give and Go. I'm Elijah Campbell alongside Michelle Knezovic. And Michelle, I'm just going to go ahead and pass the rock to you and let you take it away with our first rendition. Explain it to people, and we'll go ahead and get this ball rolling.
Okay, so The Give and Go is going to be a fun new segment we're going to do. Essentially, it's going to be like a buy and sell. But Give and Go, you know, give it a little basketball flavor. So are we going to give it a try? I'm going to give basically just prompts, things going on in college basketball. You're going to give it a try, or you think you're going to go ahead and pass on that one? Okay, so let's just jump right into it. So we're talking about Memphis for majority of the show today. Amani Bates was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a 15-year-old and has been compared to Kevin Durant. From what you've seen so far, you're going to give that a shot? You're going to go with that? Or you think you're going to go away with that comparison?
I'm going to go away with the comparison for now because I hate comparing 15-year-olds to already made final product NBA superstars. But there is a little bit of merit to it because they have very same body type, tall, skinny, lanky, great jumpers. I need to see more from the three-point line for Amani Bates, too. He did start off the year shooting about 41-42% after the first couple of games, and it's slipped down to about 38%. And if Memphis is going to have to go a long way, too, he's going to have to be able to make more than 38% of those threes and shoot a lot of them in volume. So until I start seeing more from that aspect, and seeing a more growth in his game, I'm not willing to apply the KD tag to Amani Bates just yet.
I'm going to piggyback off that. I'm going to go away with that one as well, but I'm going to keep it in my back pocket because I'm not saying no, but Kevin Durant is a one-of-a-kind player. I think Amani Bates, yes, physique-wise, his athletic ability, shooting capabilities, all of that, you know, very, very elite. Only 17 years old, five-star recruit, number one kid in the country, all the hype around him. But still need to see it on the court, need to see him perform at this level, right? We haven't seen him. He can do more at the college level right now. So we're going to keep that one in our back pocket, and we're going to see where that one goes. Okay, next one. In a one-and-done focused college basketball world, this will be the year for the super seniors. You're gonna give that a go, or you're gonna say, I don't know.
I'm giving it a go. I love the super senior thing. We talked about the ACC Big Ten Challenge earlier. My favorite game so far, or one of, there's been so many good ones, but Iowa at Virginia was a fantastic display of the super senior because Jordan Bohannon, who would be like the fourth oldest player on the Memphis Grizzlies right now, he's a six-year super senior, and like as much as I wish I was joking about that, he actually might be. I think he's only a year or two younger than me, and I'm 26 years old and I've been out of college for over 2 years. This guy is fun to watch because he's a sniper three-point shooter. He is the guy that Iowa team relies on, and he probably never becomes that if he does not stay for this super senior year. Had a very special night on the road for Iowa to earn a very tough win against a Virginia team that even though it's not, you know, your typical Virginia defense, to be able to hit those tough shots he did down the stretch is really impressive. And that's a familiar name. Those names add familiarity. Tennessee has John Fulkerson, who has seemingly been around since Don DeVoe. It adds a layer of familiarity with players that college basketball has not had since before the one and done. So I'm going
there. I feel like we're going to have very similar opinions on these prompts, but that's okay.
That's okay. Great minds think alike.
Exactly. I'm going to give it a shot too. There's nothing more that I love than going deep into March and you see a veteran team that is just playing great team basketball together. And there's something very special about it. You know, you saw Virginia a couple years ago. You saw that Baylor team last year. Mm-hmm. Villanova a couple years before that. Obviously, the one and done is amazing for these kids going on to the next level, to the NBA. But that's all about individual success. I love watching just when you see a well-versed team and they just know each other so well, the things that they can do on the court, the plays that they can make. It's really something special. So I'm going to go same one with that. Okay, next one. This year was obviously with COVID, these past 2 years, huge for the transfer portal. The transfer portal was the best thing to happen to college basketball in the recent, just because so many people were in it.
Ooh, man, that's tough. I don't know about the best thing to happen. So I'll go on that because I don't think it's the best thing. I think it's a very good thing to happen to college basketball because players are able to dictate their circumstances in ways that past players could never. I think NIL, I would rank above that in terms of the best things to happen, mostly because they can financially benefit, whether you are in a good situation or not. But I feel like the transfer portal gives players options and the freedom to be able to find the situation that works best for them, to be able to move scenarios in which like a life a family emergency happens, like you saw kind of with Tyler Smith at back in the day when he played for Iowa. Dad was very sick in Pulaski, Tennessee, and he got that transfer waiver to Tennessee. Now, like, it's easier to do that. Tyler Smith had to sit out a year, and it was a long, drawn-out process. You don't have to have that anymore, and I think that's a huge plus. But in terms of, like, gamesmanship, I still think the change to a 30-second shot clock, I'd like to see it one day go down to 24, has helped the visibility of the game, the aesthetics of the game a little bit. I think that is probably the most underrated change in college basketball. Teams can't pound the ball on the floor for 30 seconds, run a quick play, and then there's more possessions in the college game now that make it a little more aesthetically pleasing. I'd like to push it more towards the NBA where we get that 24 and what you're seeing in a lot of international leagues too. I think we'll eventually get to that, but that was a step in the right direction. But transfer portal being the one-time transfer thing too has been a really big positive for college basketball. It just might not be the biggest positive.
Okay, I'm going to go different with you on this one. Okay. I'm not going to say the best, but I'm still going to give it a shot. I'm going to have it right up there for me. I just think it's really interesting because coaches can, maybe a player they probably wouldn't have recruited out of high school. These guys can change so much in even just 2 years, 3 years, or whether they want to do a grad year somewhere. Just their physical ability, learning the game, playing. I just think it's really interesting from a coach's perspective of being able to take guys maybe that they wouldn't have recruited and then having them play 4 years somewhere and then come to their program as a grad transfer or even after 2 or 3 years. It's kind of like different puzzle pieces and then you figure out how to make your team. I don't know. I just think I really like the idea of it. I think it's great for the players on a personal level. Also, coaches, they can do a lot of crazy, creative things with it.
He would have never have looked at Kellen Grady if Kellen Grady didn't score 2,000 points at Davidson. That provided an opportunity for Coach Cal and him that they never would have had otherwise.
Well, exactly. And with historically young teams for Coach Cal, a couple years ago, we had Reed Travis from Stanford. He was a huge addition to the team. Not an NBA guy, but he's played overseas. He'll probably play in the G League. Nate Sestina, who was from
Bucknell.
Adding that veteran player to a young freshman, sophomore team, it just helps, right? Whether it be taking the guys under their wing, just really helping them learn the game, and overall is just a good thing. Okay, lastly, I'm gonna bring it back to the Kentucky roots. So the head coach of West Virginia, Bob Huggins, was critical of Oscar Tshiebwe, who transferred to Kentucky, saying that, quote, "We lost an alleged McDonald's All-American because he didn't like the fact that we were making him do things that were hard. So we are fine." This was a quote basically asking about the loss of Oscar Tshiebwe to West Virginia. He now is playing for Kentucky this season, pretty much averaging almost 20 rebounds a game. Mm-hmm. And do we think, so are we going to go with this, that it was we actually think Oscar is not a hard worker, or are we going to like give it away and think that Bob Huggins was just being a little diva and, a little salty?
Yeah. I'm going to hit on Bob Huggins being way too sour with his grapes here. Oscar Tshiebwe does one thing in basketball that's not easy to do. It's grab a lot of rebounds. It's grab a lot of offensive rebounds. That's block a lot of shots. That's play tough defense. If that was just an easy thing to do, everybody would do it, and it wouldn't be so rare for guys like Oscar Tshiebwe to do what he's doing right now. I'm also just not a very big fan of other coaches who players have played for throwing them under the bus. You don't, like, Oscar Tshiebwe's not out here saying, well, you know, Coach Huggins didn't bother to put on a suit the entire time he was at West Virginia, so maybe he's a little lazy too. You're not hearing that from him. I just think it's rude. I want to pass on it. I mean, it's I think it's a bad sour grapes look on Coach Huggins' part.
I agree completely. Left a very bad taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. And like you said, rebounds are not easy. Rebounding that frequently in a game is not easy. If it was, everybody would do it. Mm-hmm. It's also not something guys love shooting and like going off, you know, from 3-point line. Can't really say guys love just like getting in there and like getting rebounds and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely left a sour taste in my mouth. Oscar Tshiebwe, I can make an inference that he works hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But that was our first edition of the Give and Go. Next week, Elijah will throw out mm-hmm. scenarios and ask me the questions. And if you're listening or you have any suggestions, let us know, because we always love input from everybody else. But Elijah, big game tonight in Nashville, Battle of the Boulevard, 7:00 tip. Well, 5:00, we've got the women, Lipscomb, Belmont.
Doubleheader.
And then 7:00, Lipscomb, Belmont men's. We had Casey Alexander on Robbie and Rexroad this morning. Basically, he said, you know, they're coming off Orlando. They had a great stretch there. Obviously, a heartbreaking loss to Drake, but moving forward, it's not going to be an easy schedule. Lipscomb is a great team, and he's
surprisingly good this year.
Down tonight.
Yeah, it's funny. Lipscomb is the number one 3-point shooting team in college basketball. They're making 50% of their threes. 50%
in all of college basketball.
In all of college, Lipscomb, your Nashville, Tennessee is Nashville's finest Church of Christ institution. Lipscomb is the number one 3-point shooting team in college basketball. Now they're going to shoot 50% all year? Absolutely not. That's a totally unsustainable number. But does that not mean, that does still mean that they are a great 3-point shooting team. They have probably the best passing big man in college or in mid-major college basketball in Hassan Assadula, a guy who led all centers last year in college basketball in a raw total of assists. He can play. That man can play basketball. They're going to run everything through him. They're going to need him to be able to find open shots. Lipscomb, if they're able to keep that breakneck, scorching 3-point pace, has a really, really good chance tonight. I just don't think it is that sustainable. They're playing another true road game here. They had trouble against Tennessee Tech. Tennessee Tech is not a very good team. I think they're going in a different direction right now. They're finally starting to fall back to earth a little bit in the 3-point category. I still like Belmont. I like them to bounce back. They've handled losses really well this year. They've come back strong in the next game. Belmont does a lot of things offensively that still carry over. Sometimes it's the shots don't fall. I think coming back home to Curb Event Center tonight is going to be a significant thing for Belmont. I still like Belmont to win by about 8 or 9 points. If the point spread's around 10, I don't know what it is now, but if it's around 10, I still think you take Belmont.
Lipscomb underdog +12.5.
+12.5. I'd be tempted to take Belmont. I think I'd probably still take Lipscomb to keep it within 8-12. I think you'll be within 8-12, but I still like Belmont to win tonight.
I agree. Hey, They say Indiana is the basketball state, the Hoosier state. Why don't you take a look around Tennessee right now all of the men's and women's basketball programs? Vanderbilt almost just beat Arizona, former team. Yeah, exactly. So be thankful you're in Tennessee with all this great, amazing basketball. Support your local teams. We love covering them. We love going to all the games. We love just talking college basketball every week, Elijah. Can't wait fantastic. For next week.
It's fantastic. And definitely make sure to watch both Lipscomb and Belmont games. It's one of the best mid-major rivalries in the planet. The Battle of the Boulevard, one of my personal favorites. So we'll see how all that goes tonight. And we can't wait to break it down with you next week. You've been listening to another edition of Courtside with Campbell Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5.